Greetings, friends. This is Brian Hudson. I come today not as Pastor Brian Hudson, not as media producer or author or mother roles. I come today as a son to a father. I want to talk to you about my caregiving journey. I want to do this presentation to share my experience as a caregiver for my father, as well as to hopefully encourage and inform others who may be in a similar position of having to make decisions about an elderly parent, or you will be at some point. I'll share this presentation and then let your questions guide further discussion. In addition to caregiving considerations for others, like our parents, it's also good to think about our own future as we're all growing older, obviously. Before I get into the caregiving part, let me share this. One of the reasons why we save money is to provide something for our children and our grandchildren. There's also the necessity of considering our own future as seniors. We want to have enough resources to live on and enjoy a good quality of life. We know that Social Security will be there for us, and we thank God for that. There was a time when we could also count on pension income, but that's becoming less of an assurance now that many companies have done away with pension plans. If you have served the military, you have access to those benefits as well. There are also privately funded retirement plans of various types, but these require foresight in starting early in life. Only recently, I discovered something called long-term healthcare insurance, which can provide support in one's later years. It's one of those things you don't think about when you're younger, but you can't stop thinking about when you become older. In the description and resources connected to this presentation, I have shared a link to a presentation that was conducted at New Covenant Church by attorney Jennifer Norton, who specializes in elder law and estate planning. This is something I've been thinking about for some time, even before the issue of caring for my parent came into focus in a very personal way this year. As a pastor, I've always had the concern for ourselves and for our older loved ones. Here's the contact information for attorney Norton, Norton Estate Planning and Elder Law Firm. The address information is there on your screen and also in the description and resources for this presentation. I would encourage you to watch her presentation to get your mind around issues related to getting in position for a good quality of life in your golden years. Of course, having items in place such as paying off your home and being out of debt are very important considerations. My wife and I, at the age of 67, are in that position where we have paid off our home and our three vehicles, and we're debt-free. I won't get into details about personal matters here, but we've done very well by the grace of God and through good planning. One of the most significant expenses anyone will endure in later years is long-term health care. I'm not referring as much to healthcare maintenance or temporary health issues that may require hospital visits or special procedures. Many of those items will be covered by Medicare and decent healthcare insurance plans. Every U.S. citizen can qualify for Medicare at the age of 65. It's not free, but at a cost of about $175 per month, it is an excellent benefit that we've earned as citizens of the USA. What is not well understood is that Medicare and standard health insurance policies do not cover something called long-term care. Long-term care addresses issues such as changing health needs as one gets older, where assistance may be needed in areas where one cannot do for his or herself any longer. At the extreme end of the spectrum would be assisted living or nursing home care. On the more common end of the spectrum would be living at home, whether still with a spouse or living alone. Many seniors are able to be self-sufficient for a long time. Maintaining good health when younger obviously aids in long-term health. However, there are unforeseen factors such as dementia or chronic illness, and then long-term healthcare costs will become a major factor. I cannot go into specific detail because everybody's situation is different. My father, who lives in his own house, has onset dementia, is generally healthy, and can manage many of his own tasks. but still now requires in-home caregiving assistance for about half of each day. This is mainly because without assistance, he would not be eating balanced meals, taking medications on a regular basis, and would have difficulty managing systems such as finances and home equipment. Even at this fairly manageable level, my father's long-term healthcare costs are between $4,000 and $5,000 per month. None of this is paid by Medicare or by a standard health insurance policy. When he had an illness that required a hospital stay of 5 days, followed by another stay of 14 days, then followed by 12 days of rehab in a facility, nearly all of it was paid for by Medicare and its health insurance policy. When he was discharged, he came home. Then we had to pay for his care out of pocket. My father had some savings and cash in his bank account, but the cost of long-term health care, even at the limited level that he required, these funds would have been entirely exhausted within 1 year. For the past several months, we have been working on getting my father qualified for Medicaid. I will discuss this more a little later. After viewing the presentation, you will see, we began to take some steps to put things in place to help my father. At the time, I did not know that dementia would become an issue, though I began to see some signs of it. He also had the foresight to add me to his accounts as a joint owner. He arranged to have his house deed transferred to me upon his passing. Now, let me say this, dementia is not something that automatically comes with aging. Everyone is different. One of the first things we did with our attorney was to establish a will that included the power of attorney for myself and provisions that would allow me to avoid probate court in deciding how to handle his assets upon his passing. And that's all been decided. For the first few years after doing that, nothing changed, and my father went about living his life as a single man, driving, working at the church, playing tennis, and enjoying his life. We have to realize the importance of taking action before action is needed. An emergency is not a good time to do planning. I heard something years ago that is very harsh sounding, but ultimately true. That statement is, only a fool doesn't prepare for what he knows is coming. And to that, I have to confess to being foolish in some regards. The scripture teaches his mercy endures forever, but let me hasten to add, we do not want to presume upon the mercy of God. If there are things that we're supposed to do, we should do it and not just expect God to bail us out if we neglect to take action when we could. As a pastor of 41 years, I have seen a lot of situations where a lack of planning has resulted in heartbreak and misery. But I've also seen many situations where people have championed the cause of helping their aging parents and loved ones. This is especially true in families where parents have multiple children and grandchildren who are engaged in the care of their parents. As an only child, that's not something I could count on. What is also interesting and troubling is that there are families in which there are multiple siblings, but only one of them takes responsibility to help their parents. It's almost as if they were only children, though they had one or more siblings. If someone has retirement income beyond Social Security and substantial savings, it is possible to self-fund long-term health care. For long-term health care, whether at home with caregivers, other family members, or with a facility, you're looking at about $6,000 to $7,000 per month. And again, some can self-fund that, most cannot. For most people, such as my father, self-funding was not possible, which is why we opted to get him qualified for Medicaid here in our state. His only regular income since retirement 22 years ago has been Social Security. I'll discuss the Medicaid qualification process a little later. What I've shared here so far is more focused on how we care for a loved one, such as I'm trying to do for my father. On the other side is to ask this question, who's going to care for me in my old age? This is one of the most sobering realizations, as well as something difficult to assess. One thing for sure is that assuming something is not a plan. I've adopted a mindset that what I'm doing for my father may not be done for me. That's no slight on one's children or family, but a realistic assessment. We know that spouses would care one for another as long as possible. Family members will also help. But long-term health care, if that need presents itself, is something altogether different. My determination is that I don't want my children to stop their lives to take care of me. Depending upon your situation, there is also the question of willingness of children and family members to engage in long-term health care. My father was blessed to be completely independent, handling all of his business, driving, and being productive until the age of 85 years old. I began to notice changes as he turned 86. And now at 87 years of age, he's in a long-term healthcare scenario. Without going into all the details, I will share that a day came when his status dramatically changed. The need for care may be gradual or it may be sudden, but that day comes. I recall my wife and I planning a vacation to France a couple of years ago when my father was still living independently, but showing some signs of change. We purchased airline tickets that could be changed if I needed to return home. And we had left instructions with family and friends on what steps to take if a need arose. As it turned out, that contingency plan was not needed, but it was still important to have that in place. The concept of Medicaid is to provide help for people who are not in a position to pay for their own long-term health care. Again, Medicare and health insurance plans will not cover long-term health care. My wife and I participated in a webinar about long-term health care. One of the things the presenter did was to give a scenario in which someone had a stroke. The hospital treatment and stay was followed by rehab. This was covered by Medicare and health insurance. But once the person showed progress during rehab, they had to leave, even though effects of the stroke remained. Medicare would pay for about 3 weeks of rehabilitation in a facility. After that, you have to leave, and you're on your own, using whatever resources you have. The process to qualify for a Medicaid waiver begins with engaging an attorney who has expertise in elder care and estate planning. I recommend Jennifer Norton's firm. She got us started, and they referred us to a partner who has specific expertise in Medicaid waiver qualifications. It is something permitted by our state, but it has to be done according to strict guidelines. For this reason, I won't attempt to talk to you about the whole process, but encourage you to seek professional counsel. In Indiana, the first step is to qualify for something called a Medicare waiver. And I put a link to the website in the description. And here's the language from that webpage. The aged and disabled waiver allows individuals who are aged, blind, or disabled to remain in their home as an alternative to nursing facility placement. Home and community-based services are provided through the aged and disabled waiver to supplement informal support for people who would require care in a nursing facility. If HCBS or other supports are not available, individual must meet HCBS waiver eligibility and Medicaid eligibility guidelines to be eligible for a Medicaid HCBS waiver. To be eligible, individuals must be aged, blind, or otherwise disabled. They must reside in or are transitioning into an HCBS compliant setting, non-institutionalized. Have income no greater than 300% of the maximum supplemental security income amount. Next, they must meet nursing home facility level of care. After qualifying for the waiver, which is done by interview by phone, further Medicaid qualification involves reducing the assets of the person seeking Medicaid qualification to a point where they're unable to fund their own long-term health care needs. This involves something called a spend down, where disbursements are made for allowed items such as funeral prearrangements, legal fees spent on qualification for Medicaid waiver, home improvements, and needed items for living such as furniture, appliances, and such. The objective is to reduce cash assets to below $2,000. In addition to dispersing funds, there are also legal tools for creating trust funds that are not in the control of the person seeking to qualify for the Medicaid waiver. Funds are moved into a trust. We have one trust for my father's ongoing Medicaid-approved expenses. The other is a family trust that was established. Again, these are funds not under the control of the person being qualified for Medicaid. Here's more information from the website. Eligible individuals may receive authorized waiver services in conjunction with traditional Medicaid. Authorized waiver services may include, and here's a shortened list of those items, adult day service, adult family care, assisted living, attendant care, that is somebody coming in a home, home delivered meals, personal emergency response system, specialized medical equipment and supplies, structured family caregiving, transportation, vehicle modifications, and again, there's more to that list at the website. The specific services that meet the needs of the individual member are identified by the member's case manager. These services are submitted by the state agency for approval and are listed on the member's plan of care and notice of action. The process is regulated and overseen by state-authorized case managers who interface with the state and service providers. The objective is to provide proper care for disabled people while managing costs as it is funded by both state and the federal government. Let me share now about my caregiving experience. On the caregiver side, it is necessary to recognize the pressures, challenges, emotional toll, physical toll, and demands on time required. I helped my father care for my mother 22 years ago until she passed away. I wasn't there every day, but experienced enough to understand the depth of time, energy, and focus required to be a caregiver. Being an only child certainly compounds the challenge. But as already stated earlier, there are situations where even larger families only have one sibling or grandchild who ends up carrying most of their load of responsibility. As this is a caregiver support group, I would like to share some thoughts that I hope may be helpful to others who are currently engaged in caregiving or one day will be called upon to do so. Number one, this is a lonely journey, even when you're not alone. While you have a support system from medical professionals and family and friends and even neighbors, you are still in a solitary place, seeing and doing many things others won't experience. Number two, because most people have not been in the role of a caregiver or have that mindset, their emotional capacity to understand and empathize with you is minimal to absent. The phrase, out of sight, out of mind, is true. As people, when we're not actively dealing with situations, other people's needs and challenges do not enter our minds unless we're already predisposed to have that mindset. So it may not be helpful to you or others to speak about your caregiving challenges or the challenges faced by loved ones. If people don't ask you about your welfare and the welfare of people you're helping, don't feel bitter about that. Such people may be attempting to manage their own emotions, challenges, fears, and difficult situations. Relatively speaking, only a handful of people have the capacity and grace from God to manage their own difficulties while at the same time being completely interested in helping others with their needs. It's an aspect of God's grace and the Spirit of Christ at work in the heart and mind. It is helpful to identify the people who have the capacity to listen to you, help you, pray for you, and maintain a posture of being willing to help. There are people like pastors, ministers, and professional caregivers who are gifted and trained to help others because they've learned how to manage their own emotions. Some people are too far into their own feelings to be helpful in dealing with the feelings and needs of others. Number three, do not feel sorry for yourself. Even though you have deep sorrow and feelings of being abandoned and neglected, remember that these are only feelings, not reality. The fact is, if anybody cares for you, even one person, you are cared for. Stay in prayer keep your daily devotions, cast your cares on the Lord, and do as David said, encourage yourself in the Lord. Number four, do not stop living your life to care for another person, not even your own parents. Two things can be true. First, you can be absolutely committed to caring for a loved one. And number two, you can enjoy your life, do your work, have hobbies, and experience joy and happiness. The difference is that as a caregiver, you have to share your time with a loved one. It's not a lot different than being a parent at a time when you had children who needed you. You had the mindset of taking care of your children, being faithful to spending time with your spouse, and doing some things that you enjoy doing. It's also like a job where you have responsibilities and then you have your time off. Number five, find resources, people, and opportunities to encourage and educate you along this journey. I want to recommend Jan Mitchell as a resource. She helped us form our caregiver support group at New Covenant Church and has spoken to us on two occasions. I want to share with you a link to one of those sessions that we had with Jan Mitchell. We'd like to discuss home safety as a caregiver and one who's responsible for a parent living in the home. Being safe in the home, especially when no one is present, is a major concern. There was a time when my father was a fall risk. This was due to a couple of medical conditions that have been treated. Falling is one of the greatest concerns for older people. One of the conditions to my father's discharge from the first hospital stay back in January was that he needed 24/7 care because they were concerned about him being a fall risk. And we arranged that. I stayed in my father's house overnight on occasions to help manage the cost. But these services were needed before he qualified for Medicaid benefits. The cost for home care is about $30 to $34 per hour. So you can do the math on 24/7 care. As my father grew healthier and became stronger, he was no longer a fall risk. Although he's had times of dizziness, and this has been an ongoing situation for several years, part of that was because he was not consistent in taking medications to regulate his blood pressure. Here are some items I have found helpful for home safety. Number one, using ring cameras to help monitor movements and patterns of behavior. For a long time, I've had a ring camera on my father's porch. There are three cameras in his house. He's aware of all this. Each of these can be configured to give motion alerts that send notifications to my phone or my watch. Because we could not afford 24/7 care each day going forward prior to Medicaid qualification, I used technology to manage and monitor movements and to make sure he was safe. When it was safe for him to be alone when caregivers were not present, the cameras were very helpful. I can monitor these on my phone or laptop and again configure each one to give notifications when needed. As my father has progressed, having notifications from the cameras has become less of a need. I live 7 minutes from his house and he has two neighbors who are helpful and I have their phone numbers and keep in touch. His neighbor to a couple of doors north is especially caring, as he's known my dad and our family for many years. My father has an iPhone on my account, which allows for tracking and which is convenient for him to use. When my father was driving, this was very helpful because he got lost on occasion while driving. He is a good driver, but dementia affected his memory. But ultimately, we did deem it necessary to ask him not to drive any longer. And it was a very difficult day when I had to park his car at my house and inform him that he could no longer drive. Number three, we installed a landline in his house because at times his phone was not charged or he changed the settings or turned the ringer off or something like that, which prevented being able to contact him. Number four, my dad has a single level house with a basement. The house is very safe to get around. It was decided he should no longer go to the basement because of the fall risk going down those steep stairs. And that was another friction point, but it was something necessary for his safety and my peace of mind. A digital door latch was installed that requires a code to open it. His washer and dryer is in the basement, but the caregivers and myself do all his laundry now. Number five, we reversed his bathroom door from opening inwards to opening outwards. This is to prevent him from getting stuck in his bathroom against the door, should that situation arise. Number six, because my father often misplaced his keys, although they always turned up somewhere, we installed a digital deadbolt lock on his front door. Last summer, a neighbor next door called me because my dad had walked out of his house to do something in his yard, locked the door, but left the keys in the house. So I had to go over and bring my key and let him back in. Well, now that it has caregivers, the digital lock also provides access to his house via a four-digit code. Number seven, it's important to not treat a loved one like a child. Even though my father has dementia and other challenges, he is still highly intelligent. It's just that his mind betrays him from time to time. So everything that's done is with great care, respect, and compassion. So the things we've done come with explanations, negotiation, and appeals to his intelligence. When it became necessary to let him know that he should not drive any longer, I reminded him of something he told me when I was a young driver, which was a car can be a very dangerous thing because of its weight and inertia, and the lack of response and reflexes presents a problem driving. So it's something he understood because he gave me that speech. I didn't lecture him on that, obviously, but it was something I knew he would remember telling me. Number eight, my father likes a warm house, but I've gone over his house at times when he's pushed the thermostat up to 91 degrees, which is as far as it would go. He didn't do it on purpose, but he has an old thermostat and kept pushing the button to raise the temperature, although the thermostat didn't respond instantly to show the current temperature. So we installed a Wi-Fi thermostat, which has an app that I can monitor on my phone and adjust remotely. The thermostat also has a large display that Dad can touch and adjust. And it's also configured that it won't go above 81 degrees because other people like caregivers cannot survive in a house that hot. Number nine, I installed night lights throughout the house that are motion sensing. So when he gets up and moves around at night, there is illumination before he turns lights on. These are all just common sense items. My father is still highly functional, generally healthy, and in fact has been doing much better lately. At some point in the future, he may regress, but we want to afford him as much freedom of movement as possible in his own house for as long as possible. Let me touch on a few items regarding medical care, doctors, and hospitals. It is necessary to gain medical power of attorney. This is something needed, especially as persons get older, and even more so if there is dementia. Sitting with a parent during a medical consultation and hearing what the doctors and medical professionals say is very important. Remembering all that, obviously, is very important. So it's important to get their consent to gain medical power of attorney, or what they also call HCR, or becoming a healthcare representative. There are also things like advanced directives dealing with critical care decisions, whether or not to resuscitate, and such. These are difficult decisions that someone needs to make. One of the things in later life my father has greatly struggled with is being consistent with taking his medications. He was also prone to self-medicate and do things he heard about or saw on television. This inconsistency and experimentation led to a lot of problems that have now been addressed. It's good to make use of medical portals, which are now favored by doctors for communicating, keeping a record of medicines, treatments, and appointments. And so I have access to my father's medical portal, to IU Health Network. Because medical professionals are people, you sometimes have to deal with things that people deal with, including people who are not as good at some things as other people. It is also essential to advocate on behalf of your loved one, because if you do not, they may not receive proper attention or the best treatments. It's not that people don't care. They're just trying to manage a large workload. So it's helpful to keep your parents' needs in front of them. When my father was in the hospital for 2 stays, one for 5 days and one for about 12 days, All the doctors, nurses, and staff people became very familiar with me coming in, asking questions, pointing out things that needed attention and such. What I came away with in that experience was the exceptional care and commitment of most of these medical professionals. I also gained a deeper appreciation for the tremendous workload and pressures that they deal with on their jobs. Even when things are difficult and we don't fully comprehend what's going on at a hospital, it's essential to be courteous and respectful. It's not like our loved one is the only person in the hospital. That's why our presence is needed and often welcomed, as it helps them help our loved ones. I'd be interested in getting your feedback, tips, and ideas on home safety, medical matters, and making the best of a hospital stay, which by any measure is very, very tedious. There's a whole lot that goes into caregiving, and there's not time to get into all of the details of my experience with my father, some of which is just too personal to share. But I wanted to engage you and encourage you if you're on this journey, or prepare you if you one day will be on this caregiving journey. Unfortunately, the crisis I experienced with my father in January and February prevented me from developing our newly formed caregiver group as we wanted to, but we're back now. At this time, I'd like to consider your questions that you may have to help focus this discussion. You can put your questions in the YouTube chat, the provided form online, or send a text to me at 317-358-7442. We will schedule another care group support meeting in person or on Zoom to explore the items raised in this presentation. Again, I want to thank you for allowing me to share my heart with you and just a few insights. As you know, if you're a caregiver, there's a whole lot more going on than you have time to share. So thank you for listening, and I hope you are encouraged and informed.